Welcome to the Fast Leader Podcast, where we explore convenient yet effective shortcuts that will help you get ahead and move forward faster by becoming a better leader. And now, here's your host, customer and employee engagement expert, and certified emotional intelligence practitioner, Jim Rimbaugh.
The number one thing that contributes to customer loyalty is emotions. So move onward and upward faster by gaining significantly deeper insight and understanding of your customer journey and personas with emotional intelligence. With your empathy mapping workshop, you'll learn how to evoke and influence the right customer emotions that generate improved customer loyalty and reduce your cost to operate. Get over your emotional hump now by going to empathymapping.com to learn more. Okay, Fast Leader Legion, I'm excited about the show that we have today because we have a guest that's actually going to help us with something that, quite frankly, every single one of us needs help with. Kendall Lyman was born in Utah and grew up in the Salt Lake City area with his three older sisters. His father was both a gentleman farmer and a computer programmer. Consequently, his parents raised him to appreciate hard work on the farm, as well as cultural events such as orchestra and theater. All of Kendall's siblings were required to learn a musical instrument, including playing for a time in the family bluegrass band. Kendall only plays the piano occasionally anymore, but still loves playing a little ragtime. Kendall's passion for baseball has put him on a quest to see his New York Yankees play in as many cities as possible, including spring training trips with his oldest daughter, who is a diehard Boston Red Sox fan. Kendall has lived in different areas of the world, London, England, Kobe, Japan, and Santiago, Chile, and he speaks fluent Spanish. Being exposed to different situations and cultures, Kendall became fascinated in how to work with people and how to solve problems. He has an ability to see the big picture and figure out how to get things to work. Thinking that this skill would serve him in engineering or computers, he started his undergraduate degree in computer science. But Kendall quickly learned that his skills and interests were better suited to the business world, and he consequently majored in international marketing. After working at IBM for several years, Kendall became interested in how organizations work. So he earned an MBA from Brigham Young University, focusing on strategy, operations, and human behavior. Early in his career, Kendall had the opportunity to work in a strategy consulting firm. While that was a great experience, he felt that if he wasn't careful, he would end up thinking that all organizational problems could be solved with a strategy. Forcing a career change, he went to an organizational design firm and later to a leadership firm before starting the Highlands Group, a consulting firm specializing in strategy, organizational change, and leadership development. Kendall spends time serving in leadership roles in his community. He is an Eagle Scout and is passionate about helping young people learn life skills, develop character, and navigate the sometimes difficult teenage years. Kendall lives with his wife, Donna, and their three children, Nicole, Natalie, and Josh, in Lehigh, Utah. Kendall Lyman, are you ready to help us get over the hump?
I'm ready. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks for being here. Now, I've given our listeners a little bit about you, but can you tell us what your current passion is so that we can get to know you even better?
Absolutely. As you talked about change, one of the things that I have noticed over 20, 25 years of consulting is that we are pathetic at change. We need to reverse the average success rate of change initiatives. Research shows over and over again that only 30% are successful. If that's the case, and we've shown that it is multiple times, we've got to reverse that trend and help leaders get better at change. We've got to get this on leaders' agenda. And we have to help employees who are struggling with change get better at it.
Well, you know, I mean, and the reason I wanted to have you on the show is because, I mean, change is kind of like it's beyond the new normal. It is like the new DNA. If you're not able to do it, I mean, it is a whole, you know, extinction issue. It's the modern day Darwinism. And so when you start thinking about, you know, change, okay, so you have outside in, inside out, you have all these different, you know, techniques and things like that. But, you know, is it a situation where people just aren't choosing the right one, or is it a situation where they're not dedicating themselves to it? I mean, really, where are people falling down?
Well, I think the approach that we have today is incomplete. What I read over and over, I get to read a lot of change books, is that every author or consultant says that change happens one of two ways. It either happens with the individual, we call that inside out, the individual changes, and then they get a chance to change their environment, teach a man to fish, so to speak. Or management consultants say it starts outside in. Change the strategy, change the organization design, and hopefully it makes its way to the individual. But after doing that for 15 years, we discovered, why does it have to be either or? Because our changes weren't successful. I did inside out change where I put people through workshops and helped them individually learn the skills of change. But they get back to the organization or get back to the family or get back to the team, and they're not changing. And so their motivation runs out. or I've done strategy work and I've done execution work and I've done lean manufacturing work. Never quite makes it to the desktop of the employee. And then leaders get frustrated that employees aren't changing behaviors. And so it can't be either or, it's got to be both. So I think part of the problem, Jim, is that we have an incomplete view of change, number one. Number two, to do what I just said takes a lot of work. It's got to be more. It's not just rearranging the roles and responsibilities or the boxes in the structure charts, in the org charts. It's got to be both. It's got to be a complete view of how change happens.
So, you know, as reading through the book, you know, there was one of the things that kind of stood out to me, and it was some research that you had actually cited, or a statement from a best-selling management author, Gary Hamel. And, you know, he says that change efforts fail because organizations are designed for efficiency and change is disruptive to that end. So, for me, it got me to thinking, is what we're seeing right now in our difficulty to change really an issue of the whole doing more with less, you know, the whole multitasking and the entire, you know, lean concept? You know, if we're so lean, we're too busy just doing stuff. Can we really actually focus in on change?
Two things come to mind, Jim. One, we are asked to do more and more with less and less. And one research study that I read said that most of us can only do up to 120% of our day job. Someplace between 115, 120%, we kind of check out and say, enough's enough. And if we are so focused as leaders on leaning an organization, on making it more efficient, then we're putting more and more on our people and pretty soon they check out. The second thing that came to mind as you were talking about lean manufacturing, what Gary Hamel said, is lean is one approach to designing an organization, and it's an efficiency-based approach. Strategy, however, is all about effectiveness. It's how do we beat the competition? How do we get better than the next brand? How are we the next Apple or the next IBM kind of thing? If we take a lean approach to designing an organization for effectiveness, we get our measures wrong. And so as you think about setting up an organization and changing the organization, you've got to be really clear about which stakeholder needs you are going to meet. Is it about efficiency? Is it about effectiveness? Which measures are we going to hit? And then you design the organization and employee behaviors and the culture based on that. But typically an efficiency or an effectiveness compete with each other and confuses employees, and your processes and structures and systems aren't set up to do both.
Well, that makes so much sense to me, because I know I've been part of organizations where, you know, you look at what you're just talking about and you're like, hey, man, there's no congruency here. There's no alignment here. I mean, you're telling me one thing, but then from an operational perspective, I have to do something quite different. I mean, it just, there's no way it's going to come together. And of course, many times that got me in some deep trouble. However, you know, I had to point out that obvious thing sometimes, but that just made so much sense. Now, another thing that you had said, which was quite interesting. So me having a background in customer care operations and people who and the front line, I consider myself a front line person, is that when you start talking about, you know, work and occupancy in a customer care environment, occupancy meaning that I'm signed in, I'm ready to take, you know, a customer's request, you know, support phone call or what chat or session, whatever it is, or I'm on one. So I'm either doing work or I'm waiting for work.
Right.
That once people start getting past an occupancy rate of like, let's say 84, 85%, they start getting into a huge burnout problem. I mean, you know, because I'm working all the time. I don't get a chance to rest, pause, recuperate. I mean, it's just like boom, 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 boom. How can people actually work at 120%?
Well, it's not sustainable, that's for sure. And so that study that I was citing was saying you can do that for a short period of time, but if you're not building the organization to support them at an even keel at 100% level, they will burn out, they will leave, and that's why you have high turnover rates in organizations that you're describing. Another thing that we've discovered is why we have high turnover rates is around employee engagement. It used to be that we talked about employee satisfaction. And so you see a lot of things in magazines and on the news about we're stocking lunchrooms and we have pool tables and we have concierge. All of those things are about satisfaction, but there's not equal research that says that employees are engaged with those things. What I mean by that, are you willing to go above and beyond? Are you willing to give it your all? Or are you kind of coasting on the job? One of the things that we discovered is that there's a paradigm that leaders own the engagement of their employees. And I think that's partially right. I think that's 50% of the equation. It's not that employees leave companies, they leave bosses. And so if a boss hasn't created an environment or a culture or a climate that fosters engagement and high activity and fun, all of those things that employees want, then employees are going to look for a different job. But that's only 50% of the equation. The other piece that we don't talk about a lot is what we nicknamed OYO, or own your own engagement, is employees have to own their own engagement as well. And with the current workforce, with four generations working side by side, it is hard for a leader to say what works for a baby boomer works for a millennial. Instead, what a leader needs to do is engage in conversations that what engages a millennial might be significantly different than a baby boomer or Generation X. And that's okay. Let's create the conditions that will engage both.
Well, and that's one reason why I just love the work of Dr. Shay McConnon when he talks about difference management. You know, and this is the whole thing that I have in regards to people getting, you know, what I refer to as diversity, misconstrued. And that is that when you start talking about difference management, you know, and I talk about, hey, you can have four white guys sitting there in front of you. And you know what? They're diverse. Because you have one guy who is, maybe just starting his career, one guy who's ending his career, another guy who's dealing with taking care of elder, older parents, and another one who's a new father. I mean, all of those, all of those differences, mean different things from how they're actually going to show up, at work and what they need. So I totally agree with that. And all of this that we're talking about is wrapped in, emotion. And even when the change process we're talking about, there's emotion. There's one of the things in the book that you, actually talked about to me, which I started applying it and seeing that it could be used in a lot of different ways. And that is the emotional cycle of change. Tell us about that.
The emotional cycle of change was a model that came from Elizabeth Kubler-Ross based on her research in a book called Death and Dying. And what she discovered was that individually we deal with the loss of a loved one or a change differently than other people. There are cycles we go through, anywhere from denial to fear to depression, ultimately come out the other side of hope and acceptance. But change leaders discovered that that cycle was very similar to a change process. So for example, you're working in customer service, and let's say that a leader has the goal to lean your organization and cut it by 25%. Some in your team are going to say things like, finally, this is awesome. Let's get going and make the change. Others on your team are going to mourn the loss of those who left. They're going to be upset about why do we have to do it differently. They're going to wonder where leaders got this vision or this new goal. And so the tricky part for leaders is to understand, like you were just talking about, that individually we deal with that change completely differently. And so we have to help manage people through that cycle of change. Now, the way that we've found to do that is a simple idea about head, hand, and heart. The idea of head is that some of us respond better to the facts and the logic and the rationale to the change. So a leader, a loved one can share all the facts and reasoning. Others respond more to the heart, the emotional side of change and the vision side of change and what's in it for me. And other groups of us respond more to what we call hands, or letting us try it on and letting us experiment with it and see, really this isn't so bad. The new software is as easy as the old software. It's going to be just fine. And so what we do is try to apply different drivers there of head, hand, and heart to each of those emotional cycles of change just because we don't know exactly, is Jim going to respond differently than Kendall? And is he going to respond more to head or more heart activities, and Kendall's more hand activities? That way we kind of cover the gamut and enable people that transition through that emotional cycle of change.
Well, I think for sharing that model, I mean, for me, I started thinking about as you were talking that it has to go in your communications about the change as well. Is that you have to communicate to all of those different folks, because if you don't, you're going to have a problem with, having them fill in the blanks and then maybe not moving in the direction that you want them to move. So to me, that's just like an overall strategy and framework I think you can apply in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. And I think that's a tricky part for leaders. I run up against a lot of leaders who say, I can't communicate until we're ready to tell them everything. And it's such a poor paradigm, because I want to say to them, look, you're just choosing whether to be part of the conversation or not, because the conversation's happening around you already. And so what you have to do is figure out how to engage in the conversation. And a simple way that we talk about it is, how do you move through your communication an employee from understanding to acceptance to commitment? Too many times we're communicating for understanding. So we're sharing the plan, we're sharing the goal, we're sharing the vision. That's a long ways away from commitment. And that middle phase of acceptance, I've got to believe in it. I've got to trust that it's right. I have to say, okay, yeah, it is time for change. And I still have to make the commitment to say, okay, I'm in. I still have to jump in and give you my all, my 100%, instead of kind of waiting and seeing and waiting leaders out or rusting out on the job.
And without a doubt, change is swirling around us, and it's not going to end. It's just going to continue to be the way that it is. And we have to learn how to be able to live within it. And so when you start talking about that, we need these systems and these frameworks. And one of the things we also, that we look at on the show is quotes to kind of help, get us, focused and pointed in the right direction. Is there a quote or two that you can share?
Yeah, absolutely. One of them that I've been thinking a lot about lately as it relates to leadership is that organization, this is by Tim Clark, who wrote a great book around change, one of our colleagues. He said, organizations don't outperform their leaders, they reflect them. An organization's ability to adapt and adjust to shifting demands is really a function of a leader's ability to change. When I was a young consultant, I started as a strategist, and then I went to an org design firm, and I used to think that I could design really good strategy or really good organizational systems and processes and almost surround the leader to enable her to change. I don't believe that anymore. If the leader's not willing to look at her behavior and her impact and develop those around her, all the fun strategy work and the lean manufacturing design work I do is interesting, but it's going to be insignificant, really. And research that I've been reading lately by Bill Adams and Bob Anderson in a great book called Mastering Leadership, they're talking about not only is it the individual effectiveness of a leader, but it's the collective capacity of those leaders around her. And so when I think about change, I think we got to start at the top. We've got to start with modeling, walking the talk, modeling what we want to see happen. And when employees, when the rest of us see that you as a leader are actually going to make a difference in your behavior, then I'll start doing the same for me. So that's one of the quotes that I've been sharing a lot with my clients.
And I've actually had Bob Anderson on the show. He was actually episode 78 on the Fast Leader Show. And that book that you referred to, it's a masterpiece.
It really is. It's everybody ought to read that book. It'll change how you think about leadership.
Absolutely. So, when you started talking about, your learnings, and, you talked a lot about how, you've gained more insight and it's caused you to go for what you feel in what you feel is a better direction. But, those are humps that we have to get over. And, you talked about some changes being with an org design firm, being with a leadership firm. You know, and those all of those humps and getting over those humps have made us who we are, made you who you are. Is there a time where you can share one of those stories with us?
Yeah, absolutely. As a new consultant, maybe 25 years ago, I was working in the oil industry, and we were doing some really neat work about some international opportunities to expand into some areas in the oil field that others hadn't been to, and change how we explore and extract oil. And at the time, there was a few leaders in the oil industry that if they made a move, everybody else made a move. And we nicknamed it a little bit the sheep herd mentality. You know, you get the herd going in one direction and the rest of the sheep follow. But we were trying to make a change that was different than the pack. And we ran up against the change of behavior at the individual level that I didn't know how to deal with. I was a strategist. I was working in the C-suite, working in the boardroom, looking at markets, looking at how competitors were reacting to our shifts and change in strategy, excuse me. And what I kept running up against is that I was trying to work at the organizational level, but the individual level was where I was running into problems. And so I started watching a couple of those other firms that were doing it right and started to explore. And what I discovered and what ultimately became why we've done the research we have and how we've changed our approach is that you can't work at just one level in an organization. What I mean by that, there's three levels in an organization. There's the organizational level that includes the strategy and the mission, vision, and values and the process, structure, systems. There's also a team level where most of us are in teams. We have a team leader and we're working together, and we have those relationships, and how well we're emotionally intelligent helps us in working with those teams. And then there's the individual level, meaning each of us individually. And until I figured out how to work at all three levels, I kept having the same success that we quoted early in the show of 30, 40, 50% success rate. And since we've changed that and gotten over that hump, so to speak, that's been the difference maker for us, because we're able to help change not only how the organization works, but the emotions and the behaviors of individuals and marry those together. That's where real synergy, real effectiveness, and that's where performance is accelerated.
Thanks for sharing that story. So when you started thinking about some of those interventions, interactions, conflicts that you had with the front line, does one stand out to you?
Yeah, I remember getting a call. I'll change industries. I remember getting a call from a pharmaceutical company. And I'm thinking about this because you talked about lean manufacturing, and they called me up and said, "Do you do that change thing?" And I thought, "Uh-oh, what are we talking about?" And they were leaning their manufacturing process. There were 15 plants in that process. Five were significantly going to be changed or eliminated. Five had no impact, and five were someplace in the middle. As I got into what they were doing, I asked them, "What is your change process?" They were really, really excited. And they said, "Have you been to the lunchroom?" I said, "Yeah, I've been to the lunchroom." And they said, "We have a video about change." I said, "That's great." And they said, "It's in two languages, because we're an international firm." And I said, "Great, what else have you done?" And they looked at me and said, "What else should we do?" And I thought, that was so impactful for me, that the only way they could think about change was telling, mandating, sending a video to everybody, that half the people were there to get their salad or burgers weren't even watching the video, or it had run so many times that it was just droning on. They had no concept about how the work was going to change, how it was going to impact teams, what individuals needed to do differently. And from that point on, I really set a quest to figuring that out, to which is a lot of what we write about, to say, how can we ease the transition of trauma, so to speak, of individuals and teams through this process so that they will buy in and we can reverse this trend of only 30% success rate.
Well, thanks for sharing that. I mean, when I start thinking about, you know, all the things that go into change after, you know, reviewing this book, I'm like, well, of course it makes sense. But, you know, definitely we need to make it more common. I know you got a lot of things going on. You know, you have the book, you're promoting the book. I'm sure there's probably another one that's in your head if you're not already working on it. You have the consulting work, family, a lot of things. But what's one of your goals?
You know, you mentioned there's another book we're thinking about. This has led us into more research and another area that we keep seeing, which is leaders want to go fast in change. They want to mandate it, or they just want to tell people how to do it quickly, but they don't want to pay the price, so to speak. And so that's one of our goals in the next couple of years, to figure out how to describe that dilemma and help leaders through that. But from an individual perspective, one of my own goals is to figure out how to make this easier for leaders. I don't think, Jim, that leaders, if you look at how we're educated, I got an MBA and I look at the things that I read now, they were never discussed during my graduate program. It wasn't discussed about the relationships between people. It wasn't discussed about how I have to have emotional intelligence, and that's actually probably more important than overall intelligence at the level that we're working at now. And we don't talk to leaders about how do they manage a transformation. Instead, we talk about functional things: finance, operations, marketing, customer support, sales. And so one of my personal goals is to say, how do I package this, or how do I describe it in a way that makes it easy for leaders that they can say, well, that makes sense, like you did, and I now know how to do it. I think we're still a few steps away from that, but that's a goal of mine.
And the Fast Leader Legion wishes you the very best. Now, before we move on, let's get a quick word from our sponsor. An Even Better Place to Work is an easy-to-use solution that improves the empathy and emotional intelligence skills in everyone. It provides a continuous diagnostic on employee engagement and provides integrated activities that will improve the leadership and collaboration skills in everyone. This award-winning solution is guaranteed to create motivated, productive, and higher-performing employees that have great working relationships with their colleagues and your customers. To learn more about An Even Better Place to Work, visit beyondmorale.com/better. All right, here we go, Fast Leader Legion. It's time for the Hump Day Hoedown. Okay, Kendall, the Hump Day Hoedown is a part of our show where you give us good insights fast. So I'm going to ask you several questions, and your job is to give us robust yet rapid responses that are going to help us move onward and upward faster. Kendall Lyman, are you ready to hoedown?
Absolutely.
All right. So what do you think is holding you back from being an even better leader today?
You know, I think sometimes we're more reactive. Let me say that personally. I'm more reactive than proactive, reacting to people's emotions, their schedules, instead of proactively saying, wait a minute, what's on my agenda? What are my priorities? And how do I manage my own emotions to keep me as positive and upbeat as I can be?
What is the best leadership advice you have ever received?
I was taught early in my career that I needed to have it was called meat hooks is what he said, but is what he was really saying is, what's your framework for how things operate? What's your framework for how an organization operates? And so now in my brain, I have a framework. And when I run up against a problem that I can't solve, I have a bucket to put it in, a hook to put it on until I can solve it. And I think that keeps us from being too micro. It helps us look macro at problems, but then gives us time later to dig deep into the micro issues that are affecting it.
What do you feel is one of your best tools that helps you lead in business or life?
I would probably say time management and prioritizing. I read a great quote that was talking about we are juggling objects, and we get the prioritization of those objects different, and we think that everything we're juggling are plates. The reality is that our work is actually a rubber ball, and if it dropped once in a while, it would be fine. But you can't let the plates of relationships, values, integrity, health fall. And so I think about that as I'm starting my week and prioritizing what are those big rocks that I need to put in my calendar this week and let everything else fall around those.
What would be one book that you'd recommend to our listeners? And of course, we're going to put a link to Change, The Way You Change, on our show notes page.
One of the books that I read recently that has affected me probably the most is called How to Hug a Porcupine. And it was such a great book around owning your own issues, owning your own emotions, and not reacting to the world around you. Of course, we have to be charitable and kind to those around us, but it was a great way to say, no, this is healthy, this is unhealthy, and I'm going to take charge of my own emotional health.
Okay, Fast Leader Legion, you can find links to that and other bonus information from today's show by going to fastleader.net/Kendall Lyman. Okay, Kendall, this is my last Hump Day Hold On question. Imagine you were given the opportunity to go back to the age of 25, and you've been given the opportunity to take the knowledge and skills that you have now back with you, but you can't take everything back. You can only choose one. So what skill or piece of knowledge would you take back with you, and why?
I love that question. I think one of the things that I've learned the most is that I need to talk the least. What I take back is listen more, ask questions first. Don't assume that I have an answer or even know what the other person's thinking, and then really dialogue about it. That would have gotten me out of a lot of traps. That would have helped me understand people better. I think that would have been wonderful to take back to age of 25.
Kendall, it was an honor to spend time with you today. Can you please share with the Fast Leader Legion how they can connect with you?
Jim, it's been an honor. Thanks for the time. They can connect with us at changethewayyouchange.com and see what we're doing there, as well as our contact information.
Kendall Lyman, thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom. The Fast Leader Legion honors you and thanks you for helping us get over the hump. Woo-hoo! Thank you for joining me on the Fast Leader Show today. For recaps, links from every show, special offers, and access to download and subscribe, if you haven't already, head on over to fastleader.net so we can help you move onward and upward faster.